Welcome, everybody, to Mike TV. This is episode 57 for the week of November 24th, 2020. We are your Mike TV hosts, Lisa and Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hey, Lisa. Happy Thanksgiving, a little early Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you, too, my friend. Doing all right?
I'm doing good. May not seem like it for a lot of people, but I got a lot of things to be thankful for in the year 2020. So I'm doing better than I expected maybe 6 or 7 months ago. So
sure. So a lot's happened since we last spoke, but not really a lot's happened.
No, we may have a new president. We may not. Who knows?
We will. And it seems like we will. It's going to be 6 to 1, half dozen the other. But hey, this isn't a political show. Nah. This is a TV show.
No, and there's lots of good TV out there right
now. Oh my gosh. Let's just hit it. Let's just kick it right off with the show that I have been chomping at the bit to speak to you about. If you can't tell through all my text messages where I'm like, Fargo! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Two of the best. Well, where we are at right now with Fargo is the penultimate episode has aired. Episode 10, which was essentially the episode 2 nights ago. You've watched
that one, right? Yes, I actually watched it earlier today. So
okay,
you're fresh, good.
Fresh,
yeah.
Yes, and then the two episodes before that, I'm calling two of the best episodes of Fargo to date, which were episode 9, I don't know the titles, I should look them up, but episode 9 was the black and white, satchel-focused, yes. Wizard of Oz homage. Say that 5 times fast. I loved it. The tornado. I loved it. And then the episode before that.
The Nadir.
Let's just talk about that one real quick because Timothy Oliphant.
I know. I think episode 8 actually is my favorite episode of the season. There was just a lot of good stuff here. To even start, before we even get into Oliphant, this is where we get the, I guess what we would call the reconciliation and the bromance between Giusto and Gaetano forming, which I love. Like Gaetano goes from being such a terrifying person to almost just this goofy big brother or little brother, but he's the big brother, you know. And I love their relationship, how that's turned out.
Maybe we should just go through the character arcs of all three stories with Gaetano and Giusto, since sadly that did not end happily, but it sure did end hilariously.
Oh, I don't know.
Or end so far where we are. Yeah. So yes, Gaetano and Giusto reconciled in an unexpected, hilarious way and decided they were going to defeat the blacks. And they were visiting their mom, sadly, maybe having a little Italian cookout or whatever, family gathering. And the Fargo mafioso descended upon them and shot them up. That was a really cool scene, how it would cut in and out from going to all black. Mm-hmm. You would just see bodies everywhere. Somehow Giusto and Gaetano survived this, but sadly their mother did not. She was caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, Gaetano basically taking the two pistols and destroying this whole group of people almost and making them retreat was awesome.
Yeah, total badass. But their mother perished, and that really, I think, incited the full-on war as if it hadn't really already. And then we've really just seen the war for the past couple of episodes through newspaper headlines.
Yeah, and I'd actually like to mm-hmm. stop here, and we'll come back when we get to this most recent episode, because I have some disagreements about that. The other part of the season, or episode 8, which of course is the biggest thing, was Deffy, right? Deffy, is that how you pronounce
Oliphant Deffy, yes. Yeah. And Weff, so, I think Weff is the jittery cop. I'm only now learning their names, taking me
Otis.
Off.
Otis is the cop.
Oh, okay. What, isn't his last name Weff or something?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. So Deffy and Otis, they're on the trail of the Bonnie and Bonnie's, you know, no Clydes. Bonnie and Bonnie.
Ooh, and I had their names too. It's like Oedipus and no, it's not Oedipus. Her name. Debrell is her sister. Oh God, what's her name?
I just know that the one girl's like they call her like the engine or something like that, right?
Yes.
She has Native American blood in her.
I'm losing her name too. I'm gonna look this up.
Caps and Roulette, maybe.
No, you keep going.
I think that's what it is. Caps. Maybe not. I think Caps is one of them. They're on to them. I like all the stuff with Oliphant in this. There's the fantastic scene where he goes to Loy and kind of, badges him and interrogates him for the location of the women. Loy tries to tell how he made them a promise, and there's the whole fantastic kind of monologue by Oliphant where he says how loyalty between crooks basically isn't, you know, there is no such thing as loyalty amongst thieves. I love that. And then you get the line from Loy, which I know is going to one of your theories, which we'll get into here more as we discuss the next episode, but he gives the line of Mike Milligan where he tells him, I like you. You're unfriendly, but you're unfriendly in the kind of way that makes me feel like you're doing me a favor.
I was wondering, Dean, if you would catch some Mike Milligan lines since that season is so fresh on your radar, having recently watched it, much more recent than I. So I am so glad that you are catching those little nuances, because I figured there was some Mike Milligan speak woven in, and I just couldn't pinpoint it exactly. But that's great.
That line right there was awesome.
Fabulous.
And so then you get the kind of climax of the scene, which is a fantastic kind of homage to a little bit homage to the Untouchables with the staircase and stuff. But then, God, these girls just destroy this entire police precinct and this train station. There must have been 50, 60 people dead in that train station after them. And then, unfortunately, you have Oliphant, who has pinned the girls down. He's got them at gunpoint. And Otis betrays him, of course, at the end. Shoots him in the back, right through the stomach. He turns on, from behind, shoots him, which sucked. I hated that. I really thought Oliphant would make it.
Swanee Caps. You're correct. Caps, I'm going by first names. You are correct. Swanee is the girl who was killed. The woman.
Yeah, kills her, and then you see the and I think you made that good point about the ghost, about how that ghost is the one that's been cursing that family, and how he kind of shows up. That we thought actually, based on this latest episode, we had always kept thinking that the ghost was there to almost foretell death. But now I'm starting to think the ghost is actually protecting this family.
Perhaps. But they alluded to the fact that, they alluded in this last episode that he was like the,
the roach guy,
the devil himself. Okay, and Zelmar is our other badass Bonnie and Clyde duo. Zelmar, but Otis can't even get the job done. I mean, he couldn't. I was hoping that we would see Timothy Oliphant like hanging on with his life in the hospital. Why have we not gotten any closure on for sure he's dead? Do you think for sure he's dead?
Unfortunately, I think he's dead.
No.
Right.
Just to continue through, let's skip over Satchel centric episode for
I think that's a good idea, because I think that's such a bottled episode.
It is.
So here's what I didn't like about Happy episode 10.
Okay. Well, wait, before we talk about what you didn't like, is it about Josto and Gaetano? I just wanted to
No. In fact, it was just about what you were saying as far as how we haven't seen Oliphant. I didn't like how the beginning of this episode, after an entire episode of basically going away from the main story, it seemed to like jump too far in time with no explanation of how their mothers had just been killed. And then it just goes into like apparently weeks later as this war has been raging on.
The bodies were piling up.
We don't see the immediate reaction of them.
Did we need to see it though? I mean, I don't know. They're just on a killing rampage.
This was a very Noah Hawley type thing. It reminded me a lot of some of my frustration toward the end of Legion, where the last three episodes he starts playing around with bottle episodes and things. And it's like, remember how we felt at the finale of Legion, where it was like, there's too much story left to tell. And I felt the same thing here at the end. He's put the characters in their places, but I felt like this whole episode felt rushed to me. Everything seemed to be happening way too fast. The time didn't seem to really make sense. And now it's all of a sudden we have one episode left and we have to wrap all this stuff up.
You mentioned that it had been like 2 weeks. I don't think it had been all that long.
Okay.
But basically what they do show us in the montage is newspaper headlines, which I liked that passage of time, but they also show Otis becoming kind of this saluted police officer. This, you know, so like looking like he's really gone on the up and up, right? That he's turned his back on both the Italians and the blacks. And he was making some pretty big arrests, including arresting the Italians.
Right.
Which sent, hilariously, Giusto and Gaetano after him as soon as they get out of jail.
Yeah.
And this guy's too stupid to get out of town. It's his own fault, really.
So yeah, knew he was going to die for sure. I mean, he had to die for killing Oliphant.
Yeah, for sure he did. I agree. I would have loved to have seen Zelmer, Roulette, get revenge on him over Gaetano. But, so Gaetano, there was a nice scene between Gaetano and Giusto in the car while they waited for him. And then eventually Gaetano shooting him in the chest like 3 times, but not quite killing him. And then as he turns to walk back to his own car, trips on a rock and falls like a big dumb oaf, causing the gun to go off and shoots himself in the head, which was really disgusting.
Yeah, gruesome. That chunk even of show his kind yeah, of like brains fall falling out.
Oh, so gross.
I didn't like. To me, this was just.
It was hilarious. I thought it was. It's hilarious.
It was definitely a Coen Brothers trope of like the accidental deaths that you see in their movies a lot. Sure. But I didn't like it with him because.
Well, Giusto's
too enforcing of a character to like. He's just too big of a character that's how he's going to go out. I didn't like that. I just didn't care for it.
Okay, well, I liked it, but you know the characters are being taken out.
Oh yeah,
so, I mean, it's happening.
But that's what it felt like to me.
No, there's not many left standing.
But that's what it felt like to me. It was just another way of. Hey, we got to pull these people off the board, so let's just pull them off the board. I don't know.
Who could have predicted that kind of death for Gaetano, though?
As soon as he showed his foot hitting the curb, I was like, oh, he's about to shoot himself in the head.
Oh.
I don't know. I didn't care for it.
Let's quickly talk about Ornetta. She, like an idiot.
Again,
she commits a crime, almost gets away with it, but sticks around because she thinks she figures out finally that it was Ethel Rita who wrote the letter to Dr. Harvard. And she even goes as far to discover that her ring is missing, I forgot that it was Fada's ring.
But even this is something that was, so she's been just stewing for 2 weeks. Has she not been, so she hasn't reconciled or there's been nothing between her and Giusto anymore?
Yeah.
I know she threw him out, but like he seemed like he loved her. He never tried to go back for her. She never thought to go to him for help, knowing that this doctor had woken up. She knew the doctor was waking up and he was alive. So again, this was one of those things where it just seemed like, again, he did the same thing with Legion. He wants that episode right before the penultimate episode to be a complete bottle episode, which he did the exact same thing with Legion, bottle episode. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, hey, hopefully they won't remember some of these storylines and we can just kind of move forward a little bit here. I didn't care for that. Didn't care for it at all.
I'm not poking holes in it because I could see maybe it wasn't 2 weeks. The timeline was discussed either between Loy and his wife when they were about to meet Happy. You know, he was talking about, he mentioned a time, like it's been such and such. And, you know, she was saying, we've got to call in the reinforcements before Happy came, which I guess was her cousin or something.
Right. Like yeah. Her cousin.
And also the uncle to Jeremy Harris.
Yeah. To Leroy, who we've been here, Leon. He's been telling us he's Happy's nephew all year. So they've been foreshadowing Happy showing up. What's the deal with Happy? What's with the pictures of like the fathers that he like seems to listen to or talk to or something? Like,
oh, no.
Just some weirdness.
His guiding force.
Weird Noah Hawley stuff.
Well, okay, I'm sorry, and I skipped over because I wanted to go back to Ornetta. So she's about to make her big kill, gets all the way into Ethelreda's bedroom without waking a soul, and has this big syringe, which of course only on TV do they ever
squirt it,
it out a little bit so some comes out of the top before they do the injection. Anyhow, I've never been to any doctor where they do that.
Well, and even the point of that, the point of that is to get air bubbles out. But if you're planning on killing her anyway, it doesn't matter if there's air bubbles in it,
right? So. But then the ghost thing, the ghost of the old man Roach slave owner appears, and somehow Ornetta can sense it or see it. If I could just say, I really wish I had better explanation. I understand how Ethelreda's family is connected to it and all sees it, because Debrell explains it to her very succinctly in this episode. We get the exposition dump really on that, but it was great. But how is it that Ornetta was able to sense and or see it? Not clear. But whatever it was, it spooked her enough to go running ass out of her house and straight into the arms of the police, which I liked also.
This to me was the UFOs in season 2 all over again, where it's like, hey, we need some weird thing to just make sure we needed that Deus Ex Machina at the end. So we'll just make sure that there's some weird ass thing that keeps someone who we like from being killed. I don't know.
Do you think she saw it, sensed it? What do you think it was that
she seemed to like be starting to turn over her shoulder right before it cuts away and she screams? So again, I'm thinking this ghost actually is somehow protecting this family because I think it almost. I'd almost have to look back at episode 8 too, when it appears behind Otis's shoulder right before Roulette rushes at him. If he may have even like started looking over his shoulder potentially, whether it was because he sensed it or whether even because he noticed her looking at it or something, but maybe this is actually somehow protecting their family. I also thought it was weird. And this is just, again, maybe the editing concept. They showed like, the dude downstairs with the shotgun asleep. They made the comment earlier about how the mom sleeps with the shotgun and she's a light sleeper. This woman's all the way upstairs without making a noise. Then she screams for about 7 seconds and somehow gets all the way back through the house without getting shot or like, you know, someone, I don't know.
With her crazy waddle.
Just, like I said, this whole episode just felt very, we got to put people in place for the finale. We're just rushing through a lot of stuff. What do you think? Is that the last we see of her? Do we get some kind of epilogue?
No. No, that would not be a suitable ending, that she just goes to jail. We don't even have enough time for her trial.
You think she dies?
I think Josto will somehow get her out on bail. No, that doesn't seem right. I don't know. I have no predictions when it comes to her. I'm shocked that it took this long. Well, of course, when she confronted Ethelreda on the porch, we kind of glossed over that. Ethelreda was not afraid of her. Because I kept thinking, why hasn't Ethelreda figured out that she left her little journal thing in the closet? You know, that she hasn't been like, where's my notebook? But I guess at the end of the day, she didn't care. She was pretty like, whatever, call the police, do it, bring it on. She had no fear of Ornetta, and I liked that.
Yeah, and obviously that shows that moves forward to the final concept of this episode where she goes to meet Loy.
Love.
Just shows up like a badass completely. Every time he questions her about something, she has some other way to deflect like his misdoubts about her and shows how underrated of a person, you know, or just how underestimated people see her as. But which has always been the thing from the very beginning, right? The fact that in her black school, the white principal, you know, talks about how he just doesn't see how smart and brilliant this girl is. They think she's a troublemaker because she's smart.
Right.
So this has been going on all season.
And like the badass, she starts by, and I loved this, that she starts off by noticing the art that he has hanging in his office.
And I love his, like, I just saw it in the magazine. I guess I want to recreate it. Maybe it's supposed to make me look like a badass. What'd you say it's called? Like had no clue love about anything him. About it.
This show will for sure, I mean, I know we don't put a lot of stake in Emmys or award shows as a whole, but this show for sure has got to bring a zillion nominations to these people. Chris Rock, chief among them. He is incredible.
Rock's got to get it. The...
Ornetta.
Jesse Buckley. In fact, this scene Jesse Owens. When she's on the porch, that scene right there is the reel I would send in, because she's insane, but like scary. Even though Ethelreda isn't afraid, I was afraid of her. Like, I mean, she's a scary lady. I'll see you in your dreams type. I mean, that's just crazy awesome.
Well, even the way she poisoned the doctor with the macaroons, which, by the way, looked delicious.
Do they look as delicious as the macaroons in The Mandalorian this past week?
Oh, we'll get there. Some of my favorite. No, they looked more delicious than those, especially before they are spit up.
Yep.
Should we move into the bottle episode?
Yeah, so let's go to your boy, possible Mike Milligan.
For sure, Mike Milligan, you mean?
I don't know.
So he's been taught his words of wisdom from his father. I do want to say, I want to head it off with saying, somehow I think we're going to see some closure on Satchel. It looks as though, I'm sorry to jump ahead of that whole episode, but it looks as though he's walking home. He's going to just walk home. I have a feeling he's going to get home and his whole family is dead.
That's what my question for you, even after this, was going to be, do you think that Loy and his wife
will ever
know that he was actually alive the whole time?
I don't. And I hate that. I wish they could know, but no, I don't.
I really liked the episode East West. I thought it was a very cool, like I said, the whole bottle thing. I liked the black and white concept of it, and then didn't even realize what they were, once at the end, the tornado and then the color coming in, the cool kind of,
and that's
Wizard of Oz thing.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This little town they go to, that store where the rabbi's money had been in the walls. I want to talk about the money for a second, but the rabbi goes back to get, confront the new owners of that store. Isn't that the same storefront that's in season two in the town that either Mike Milligan works?
The one where the guy's selling the typewriters.
Yes. That's
possibly
the same store.
Possibly. Okay.
That was for sure. I was like, that is for sure the same store.
Okay.
Roby, somebody write in and let us know. Roby, we haven't heard from you in a while, by the way. Hey, Roby, you still listening? Write in and let us know if that's the same store, because I'm pretty sure it is. Another signifier that this
I like that.
I think Mike Milley, I think that Satchel will just, he'll walk all the way there. Everyone will be dead. He'll turn around and just walk all the way back. And then that's the town that he essentially, he'll go back to that inn and maybe stay with that lady who was, working the desk at that little bed and breakfast thing with the divided the old, among the two sisters.
The East West.
Oh my God, the East West. I loved it.
That was a weird.
Well, it
weird
was
thing.
Like the witches and the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, right.
They just played it. Even the little dog. And your little dog, too. I mean, it was everything. It was just perfect.
So do you think, is Rabbi dead?
Yeah, I think the tornado got Rabbi.
And we see him go pretty high up in the tornado, so.
That effect, by the way, incredible.
Yeah. I don't, again, that's another, I guess, Oliphant's death at least made sense to me. This is another thing where I get he's doing some kind of weird Wizard of Oz thing, but I think it's what you're just randomly killing off Milligan in a way that is not, to me, meaningful to the character. And I guess it makes sense because he so many times said, and they even echoed in this final episode, the whole, if I'm not back, I'm either dead or in jail. So it does make sense to me that he would never truly know what happens to Rabbi Milligan. He just would one day not come back. But I guess I would have, I don't know. I just,
and did he have the money? Did Rabbi have the money with him when the tornado sucked him up? Or was the money, is the money in the care of Satchel now?
I don't know.
He's got the gun, but they never showed
him with money. So
that's a shame. When he pulled the gun, going back to this last week's episode, or this week's episode, when he pulled the gun on the two guys in the truck and stared down the barrel, I swear whatever he said to them was also another Mike Milligan phrase that we
might have been.
And I thought, make them get out of their truck and take their truck, Dubby.
the clues definitely are all there for him to be Milligan. I guess the reason why I still just don't like it is because I don't like that actor.
Oh, shut up. He is a kid. Very, how dare you? What is wrong with him?
His line delivery makes him sound almost like borderline dumb. He's just, everything he says is very slow, and he just, that's methodical. Not how Mike Milligan, no, not methodical. Like, he sounds too dumb. Like, or not dumb, but just, he's not Mike Milligan.
Milligan overnight, Dean. Give this kid a break. He's
no,
like,
but the no characteristics of this boy in any way translate to the fast talking, smooth talking Mike Milligan. With
not
again,
true.
We see,
what no. About the billboard? The future is now billboard. I loved that touch as well, and even him at the end, kind of looking at it, and I feel like that was also a Milligan touch. That somehow, that was kind of his philosophy.
Yeah, I don't know. I still don't. I don't
words
like
to live by.
I think that's what it is that drives me. I just don't like that kid actor. He's no way to me Mike Milligan.
That is just, I'm not accepting that as a reason for not agreeing.
I'll get back
to
you after the finale, because maybe they'll show a transformation and he'll show some more things. But even when he tells those guys off, I like that he was more confident mm-hmm. there. But even then, to me, Mike Milligan's all about these like long random soliloquy, you know, almost mm-hmm. Samuel L. Jackson Pulp Fiction style. Like, sure. He's going to go off and say
that,
all these sentences.
This was his first time staring people down.
But if they don't ever show any sense of that before the end, next episode, we're just to assume like there's that such a. So unless they're going to do another episode season where he's like Mike Milligan teenage years, you know, or Mike Milligan the college years, and
like they did with Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, exactly. And they do that, and we see that. Then I'll be happy, I guess. If they can do that, then I'll be happy.
There will be some button on the end that gives the definitive on whether or not he grows up to be Milligan.
Will there? I believe that Noah Hawley's not really a person to give definitive conclusions all the
with
time.
With the character threads that he has woven through the season, like with Molly's father and things, stories like that, we knew without a doubt who we were dealing with here.
Okay.
So I just don't think he would leave it that vague. I don't know. I trust in Hawley. In Hawley.
All right. So here is our questions that we usually do for the end. Who survives Fargo season 4?
We did this.
Yeah, but now that we're at the end here.
We pretty much predicted only Ethel, Rita, and you know.
No, I think I said Oliphant. I think I thought Oliphant was.
Yeah, we said Oliphant too. I know we were really wrong.
But now is it pretty much Ethel, Rita, and potential Mike Milligan as the only survivors?
Yeah, I think so. I think even, as sad as I am about it, I think even Loy's son, who's courting Ethel Rita, I think even he's got to go, right? Because any tie to Satchel's life would prevent him from becoming Mike Milligan.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's everybody from his family has to go.
So who ends up running Kansas City at the end?
Josto, right?
Maybe, or not necessarily Josto, but more Italians, right? It has to be because of Brad Garrett and like people from season 2 or the running. So
yeah,
somehow the Italians we assume will win, or at least will pick up the pieces from the leftovers.
Mm-hmm. Which will make Satchel know he can't stay in this town, so he just walked all that way for nothing, stole all that milk for nothing.
But he works for them at the end, right? He was working for Kansas City.
That's true. So maybe we'll see him go in and introduce himself as a, you know, maybe we'll see the new Italians come in and we'll see Satchel just go right up and
introduce
himself.
I mean, it would make sense considering how Rabbi ended up growing up and working for the Italians and he's in the same situation. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think Ornetta and Ethel Rita, I guess, to me. I think, actually, I don't really know Ethel Rita's plan, but Loy seemed to like it a lot. When she delivered the ring that was Josto and Gaetano's father's ring, which, by the way, they had been looking for back in episode 1. So somehow that's giving Chris, or Loy, I keep calling him Chris Rock, but that's giving Loy the upper hand. or I don't in know his how. Mind.
I mean, if literally, if you think they're going to end the war over a ring, that seems silly, but sure.
It does seem silly. It sounds like something that would go on in my family.
But now, honestly, now that Josta doesn't have Gaetano, Josta was one who didn't want war to begin with. So it does make it seem like mm-hmm. he is in a position to where he will back down, he'll be willing to find a peace.
Will Josto confess that they really did not kill Satchel, but they effectively lost him?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the Italians in general weren't happy with Josto, so I could almost see them all coming in and just like wiping everybody out and starting over at the end. So,
yeah. Yeah. With Satchel being the last man standing.
Yeah. So we'll see.
And Ethelreda, I guess, maybe Ethelreda and her family survive. What about her aunt? Her aunt, we're just never going to see her again?
Velmar? She's got to turn up at the end somewhere, right?
I would think so. Ooh, okay. All right. Anything else to say about Fargo?
No, I mean,
quickly like talk said, about a few other shows.
It's been an overall fantastic season, and Holly usually finishes out seasons well. Like even like I said, I'm not too upset with the things I see as messiness here in the last couple episodes, because he tends to deliver at the end. Mm-hmm. So
he will. And unconfirmed if there will be a season 5. In fact, FX in the trailer that they showed at the end of this week's episode, they called it series finale. They didn't call it the season finale, but they do this every time with Fargo because it is that particular series is finale.
Right.
And also my understanding is that FX has just left it very open-ended with Noah Hawley that he can always come back and do another season when he gets the idea.
Yeah, so they definitely have
they've
trust
left
in
the
Hawley.
Ball in his court, which is smart.
That makes sense.
All right. Mandalorian. 2 more episodes have aired of Mandalorian since we last spoke as well.
Mando!
3 more episodes. No. 2 more, excuse me, 2 more episodes. Yeah. And not as good as the first one. They were still very good. They were moving the plot along. There was some great, if you love seeing the fighting in space between the, you know, I don't, that went on a bit long in this past episode for me. I was like, get on with it. But all the Baby Yoda stuff made up for it. That was all my favorite stuff. And I know his name's not Yoda. Please, everybody, I know that. Listen to
previous people
episode.
Over that. He's Baby Yoda.
I gotta call him Baby Yoda. He's so freaking cute.
He's
so yes, stealing the cookies.
Yeah,
amazing.
Baby Yoda basically becomes a bully, stealing the kids' lunch, and then like the kid just like
And even the episode before that, eating the frog lady's egg.
Oh, yeah, the frog lady's
egg. Oh, so great. But then seeing one of them, you know, be birthed. And
yeah.
It was very cute. The frog lady I thought would annoy me more than she did, but I ended up liking that story with the frog lady.
Yeah,
and I really loved the spiders. Why does it always have to be spiders? Made me think of Harry Potter. But I did love the ice spiders that they had to escape.
Yeah, the past couple episodes, well, so I guess it's been 3 since we've last done, because it's the ice spiders, then the other Mandalorians that he meets last week, the women Mandalorians.
I liked that. And, I liked them.
And then this week, of course, with Carl Weathers and Carol Dune.
Oh, yeah.
In the Imperial base. Yeah, I think in general, even if a bad Mandalorian episode still has fantastic moments with Baby Yoda every single time, the production of this show is so good, where it's like, even if you could watch anything that's on the screen, it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
The special effects are fantastic, except for, of course, you have seen all over the internet this week, it's all about the grip whose leg is in armor being shown in the background of one scene this past week. They keep calling it the joke is it's the same guy who left the coffee cup in Game of Thrones. You know, he strikes again. The show is fantastic. You could tell when it comes to Star Wars, you know, especially people who've you know, at least through the movies, especially these last three movies, where it was so clear that the people making these last three movies had no, there was no storyboard as far as what was going to happen for this trilogy. And it's so clear that Jon Favreau has written out what his plan is for these. It's not just piecemealed every single episode. Like, everything from old episodes comes back to mean something. Very mundane or almost kind of seemingly unnecessary things will at least have references later on and have some meaning. So he's very careful about what he's doing. He's very deliberate with what he's doing. And it just shows how much he is. He knew Star Wars had been basically broken and I think really fucked up in certain people's hands. And he wasn't going to let he is the redemption to Star Wars.
He is 100%. Thank you, Jon Favreau. We also saw the return of Gus Fring.
Moff Gideon. Moff Gideon.
So good to finally see him back in action. And also now they have the tracker on the ship. So that whole episode really was just to get that. And I saw it in that mechanic's eyes when he turned around. I was like, that guy's going to betray them. But I did not see the tracker coming.
We also
I just want to say very quickly, too, the other Baby Yoda moment I love, which was really a callback, I think, to Groot and Rocket with the blue and red wires.
Yeah.
Mando speaking to him through the little tube.
Yeah.
It was like Rocket telling Groot.
Yeah, you know, not that button.
Yeah, and
you just knew he was going to electrocute himself. It was just a given. Like, he's going to
As if it couldn't get any cuter than Baby Groot. Here comes Baby Yoda, and don't cross the wires. Put the blue one where the red one was. Red one, and he can't even follow those instructions. The electrocution. Adorable.
And later on when he's in the ship and they're, you know, doing evasive maneuvers, but he's just in the back with his hands up. Yes! It's like a roller coaster. So good. It's so good. Like, it is one of those things where if you really went, you know, and people had those doubts when Mandalorian first premiered last year, like, are they really going to do this little, like, is this the Disneyfication of the Baby Yoda? Surely, you know, this can't last. No, it lasts. He never gets old. It never gets tired. It's funny every time. It's cute every time. And it is, it is this almost Mr. Mom, 3 men and a baby concept of the dad out of, you know, fish out of water, dad having to deal with this toddler who he's never had to deal with before.
It's great. And
only the dad is a space cowboy, you know?
Yes.
And so
it's what the kids are doing, like with all the acronyms, with all the, LOL. I know that's not one that the kids are doing, but you know what I mean? We need one that's SWD, Squeal with Delight, because that's what I do every time Baby Yoda is on the screen. I just squeal with delight. So SWD, is that already one? Do you know? Or did I just make one up for the kids?
You may have just made one up. I don't know.
Squeal with delight.
SWD is probably some kind of like sexual acronym instead. God, you'd have to ask Tim Andrews. I wouldn't know.
All right. Anything else to say about The Mandalorian before we move?
I think it only has four more. Fourth or fifth. So, yeah, we're halfway there. I think the story, like you said, is about to pick up with the tracker. So we are going to see a confrontation again between Moff Gideon, or what I like to call him, the Darth Chicken Man, and Mando. So I'm looking forward to it.
We saw inside Moff Gideon's ship at the end of that last episode. He had like a bunch of Darth Vaders in there, right?
They are Dark Troopers, which are pulled from some 1990s Star Wars video game of some sort. That's another thing that Favreau has been doing. Favreau and Dave Filoni is the other showrunner, who was the animated runner of all the the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels on Cartoon Network, which is supposed to be really good. But they've been pulling, almost every episode pulls these random Star Wars canon things from either the books or from old video games or from these animated shows. So like the three Mandalorians he met last week, that was straight out of Star Wars Clone Wars, the animated show. In fact, Katie Sackhoff, is that the she voiced that same character in the animated show. So they're pulling.
She's a really good actress too. It was great seeing her.
And so this, I would say spoiler alert, but by the time this is posted, I'm sure the next episode will come out. Mm-hmm. So they mentioned another person from that show. I'm going to ruin this name. It's like Ahsoka Tano, who is like a Jedi alien, who apparently is one of the few Jedi left. And that's who apparently they might be going to meet next episode. Nice. And I think the casting rumor is it may or may not be Rosario Dawson. So pulling in another awesome cameo.
Yes. Great.
So we may see some more Jedi concepts and more Jedi magic here in the next episode. Maybe that means Baby Yoda get a little bit more force training, and we'll get a step closer to him finding where he's supposed to be. So no, Mandalorian is awesome. Watch it.
He knows when to use it. He knows when to use the force when there's cookies involved.
Cookies or absolute danger. Yeah.
Yes.
Unless there's ice spiders. Apparently then is not a good time to use the force. I kept thinking that would be a perfect time for him to just like wipe all those guys up.
I don't think he has enough force. Because when he dealt with the thing last season, the big mud thing, that wore him out for like a day.
Yeah.
He couldn't have dealt with all those ice spiders.
I don't know.
He's just a little baby, Dean.
He's only a 50-year-old baby. So what else have you been watching?
Well, you mentioned before we started recording that you have started The Undoing. I am current with it. Now, this is going to be a 6-episode series and one and done. It's a limited series, only 6 episodes. So HBO's aired through episode 5. Episode 6 airs this coming up Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So you'll have time to catch up. What episode are you on?
3, I think.
Okay, all right. Any predictions on who murdered Elena?
At this point, it seems my biggest bet is Nicole Kidman. I think she has some kind of mental break that we don't know about yet, or we may know about as far as current, but at least by episode 3, she is a psychiatrist. There's been some mentions in the past of bipolar disorder, things like that, of other people. I think she might have either not necessarily a mental disorder, but maybe
repressed memory.
She has some blocked out memories because we keep seeing her from almost her point of view of flashbacks of the actual murder happening, which
and
was super gross.
Seeing them having sex.
Super gross murder of her
bludgeoning.
Face being smashed with a hammer. Yeah, and obviously this lady who was murdered there, she was very much coming on to her, so I think there was more of a relationship there that we don't know. I don't know. I don't really know. I thought what I really liked about it is I went, you told me the show was good. I'd heard a little bit about it from some other things. I knew it was supposed to have some kind of murder mystery concept to it, but I just turned it on one day. My wife hadn't even heard of it yet, which I'm surprised because she likes David E. Kelly's.
David E. Kelly, show, right?
And
who did Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies. And then she really likes that. And, I'm surprised she hadn't heard of it. So we turn it on and we're, almost all the way through the first episode. And she's just like, what the hell is this show about? Because I was like, this just reminds me of like adult Gossip Girl. It's all these rich, socialites, basically. This weird lady who's kind of butting in and getting all naked and stuff. And so we were like, what's going on here? And of course, by the end of the first episode, you realize, okay, she's dead and there's a murder mystery abound. So, yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes. I've heard from even maybe a episode or two, it goes maybe by episode 4. So that does a good job of almost ping ponging of where your doubts and where your expectations are for who killed it. So I hope that's kind of still the case. Hope it isn't too obvious by near the end as far as like you're still guessing by the finale. So
you're still guessing by the finale. Cool. We don't know going into, there's some other characters. We talked about Nicole Kidman, Hugh Grant last episode, and Donald Sutherland, isn't he great in it? But Lily Rabe also, we didn't mention her as Nicole Kidman's friend. Now, let's see. Have you gotten to the point where they've got Jonathan out of prison yet?
No, he's still in prison.
All right, well, that happens in the next episode. So mini spoiler, I won't go any further. But they get him out on bail and they get an attorney. And
I know even she has some like secret relationships with him in the past, as far as like he asked, like when you find out he was fired and she was his attorney for that.
Yes.
So,
yes. And the attorney, okay, so the attorney confronts him. More comes out about he was having an affair with Elena. You know that part, right? And that the baby is his. You know that part, right? Okay. So when, and I won't go too deep in this, this really isn't a spoiler, but there's a scene and it's brief, but I want you to watch for it. They're at a diner and the attorney, who's a great actress, by the way, doing a fabulous job, she's saying, have there been other affairs? And he's kind of hedging around a bit about it. And she's like, you better tell me because I'm going to find out. And he said, one other, just one time.
Okay.
And then she says, what was her name? And then the scene cuts away. Now, my mother's theory before that scene even aired is that Lily Rabe is somehow mixed up in this and that she had an affair with Jonathan. Lily Rabe, whose character is Sylvia. Right.
Yes.
That she was the one who had an affair with Jonathan and that she was the one who was jealous and killed Elena. But gosh, I don't know. That's a, I don't know.
I don't know.
I had another theory, that they're trying to make the kid kind of creepy. Henry. Their kid.
I mean, I haven't gotten there. I haven't seen that yet. So,
and they're doing it very subtly. And so anyway, nobody's off the table yet. They've even brought Elena's husband back into it as a possible suspect. Cool. So they're all, and Nicole Kidman, yes, a suspect. They're all, you're exactly right. So you're, it's, I have no predictions. I like the Lily Rabe. I'm going to hate it if it was the kid. I'm going to hate it. I'll just say it right now.
I just know it's probably not Donald Sutherland because he's just such a scary looking dude that he's too obvious. The man is, the man looks like a vampire. Like, and the fact that he's 118 years old.
Did you ever go back and watch Trust? Please write that one down. Please watch Trust. I swear to God, Dean, you will love it.
Okay.
Love it.
I do like Donald Sutherland and anything.
It is. It's Donald Sutherland and it's Brendan Fraser. Remember we talked about this.
Hey, speaking of, Encino Man 2 possibly coming out soon or being in production soon.
Yes. But, okay, so David E. Kelly, we talked about him. Sorry to blow that off, but I'm not going to watch Encino Man.
That's the appropriate response.
David E. Kelly, known for more recently for doing The Undoing, but also Big Little Lies, had been on record saying, and he also did Mr. Mercedes, by the way, but he'd been on record saying that he would never go back to network television because prior to all these pristine shows, he did shows like Ally McBeal, The Practice, L.A. Law. Boston Public. I know. I'm just looking at all these. Anyway,
yeah.
Boston Legal, right. Boston Public, The Practice. Did I say that one already?
Yeah.
Anyway, he is back with a network show on ABC. I was like on the fence about watching it, but it also has that actor who we love from
Ryan Phillippe.
Well, it has Ryan Phillippe. I wouldn't say that we love him, but no, the guy from American Horror Story who was the killer in this last camp away.
Like 28 killers.
No.
Yeah. The guy that plays Mr. Jingles, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's in it. There's several other recognizable actors and actresses in it, including Ryan Phillippe. And anyway, that's called Big Sky, and it's on ABC. The first episode has aired. What I've heard about it is that you need to give it at least the first two episodes before making a decision. I'm already in on the first after the first episode. It is not what you think, and it has an amazing twist at the end. Not really amazing, but a shocking.
Okay.
Yeah, you should definitely dip into Big Sky.
The previews for it have intrigued me to the point where, is it, you said it's on CBS, right?
No, ABC.
Oh, ABC, okay. Yeah, the previews for it have intrigued me, so I definitely want to check it out, and hope that it doesn't fall into a network type of trap, and maybe it's like early 90s, you know, experimental type network shows. Again, like I got somewhat of a Twin Peaks vibe from it. It doesn't look like it's Twin Peaks kind of thing, but just the vibe of kind of small town, but something weird's going on all the time type of thing. So I'm interested.
I would agree with all of that, with the vibe and everything, but I think it's a little more straightforward than Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
it's
not
going to be as avant-garde as Twin Peaks.
Right, good. And I'm fine with that.
And I think that they've got David E. Kelly behind it. I think the network's going to give him the freedom to do what he wants. Yeah. They're not going to fight him. They've got him back. They reeled him back somehow. So,
and I mean, there's no better time than any right now to put out risks on television, especially when streaming services are kicking your ass constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's a good idea.
Well, and just quickly, I want to touch on, other than Big Sky, I don't even want to say anything about it to spoil it, but yes, small town, weird people. It's a lot of character set up in the first episode, characters being put into place, lots of them to watch, and freaky by the end. It gets freaky by the middle and is super freaky by the end. So I think the next episode airs tonight or tomorrow night, as a matter of fact. Anyway, I've also binged all of season 4 of The Crown. You know I love The Crown. It's back on Netflix. I watched about half of it last weekend. Half of it the first weekend it dropped. Dropped on a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. So I watched, dropped on a, I guess, Sunday morning.
Right.
Got up early, watched about 4 episodes, then watched casually another couple episodes during the week because I'm just working too much, and then finished it all this past weekend. So good. We're at the 80s now with all the royals we know.
Right.
We get a glimpse of Prince Andrew marrying Sarah Ferguson, Fergie, Duchess of York.
Yep.
So we get a glimpse of that. But of course, two main focal points of this season, of course, what are the 80s focused on? Princess Diana and Margaret Thatcher. And both excellently portrayed. Margaret Thatcher, I know, a polarizing character, played in a polarizing way brilliantly by Gillian Anderson.
Okay.
I mean, love it or hate it, it is almost, did you ever see John Lithgow playing Churchill in the season 1 of this show?
Yeah, I think I watched a few episodes of season 1 with him especially in it.
And his character, I mean, even his portrayal of Churchill was even very, a little bit polarizing.
Right,
for the
right,
time. Right. I don't want to just keep using that word, but it's almost like when he was on screen, that's all you could focus
on. Right, and they do a good job of not trying to say that this character is a good or bad person.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't make Margaret Thatcher look like the world's greatest leader. I mean, and lover or hater, I mean, she did what she did with Britain, and I don't know enough. I mean, they definitely take it all the way through. Falkland War, all of it, all the trials and tribulations she goes through. So, but she's, I mean, Gillian Anderson, she's just great. If you don't want to go back and watch previous seasons of The Crown, I get it. But this is all stuff that has happened in our lifetime. It's
right.
Very interesting. And it's not all focused around Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip anymore because they're not interesting. So it's Prince Charles, who's a real son of a bitch.
Of course.
And his marriage to the extremely bulimic Diana, which is, I mean, it's like they really nail that home that, okay, she is throwing up all the time. If you thought David Thewlis threw up a lot in Fargo season 3, you're going to get as much Princess Di throwing up, except we don't have to see it all.
Okay.
But this actress does a great job. And spoiler for it, do you care about being spoiled? Anybody who doesn't want to be spoiled on.
Oh, you're not going to tell me Princess Diana really dies at the end,
does
she?
No, she doesn't die.
And oh, good.
This show follows history, so we know she's going to
die. Oh, no.
They are not going to not have her die. But this season ends with still their marriage on the rocks. They've been talking about divorce. They start talking about
early divorce. 90s, not quite.
It's still like late 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think they're going to do her death in the, they've got to
next is season. Who is playing, have they switched actresses again of the person playing Elizabeth?
Not yet. They will for the next one.
Are they still planning on doing Helen Mirren?
I'm sorry?
Are they still planning on Helen? Wasn't the kind of rumor that Helen Mirren was going to come play her in the like later series or later seasons?
It's going to be Imelda, blah, blah, blah. I always forget her name, but she played, she was in the Harry Potter movies as the woman that was like wanted to become the headmaster, took out Dumbledore. She was really on the side of, it's that actress. What's her name's Imelda something.
I don't know her, and I know who you're talking about.
She had a bit role in the last season of Downton Abbey as well. Or no, I'm sorry. She was in the Downton Abbey movie. But she's been in almost every British thing.
Umbridge, Dolores Umbridge.
Dolores Umbridge, yes. Okay, the actress who played her, thank you.
Gotcha, all right.
Okay, is playing the queen. That's very well cast. Good casting.
Yeah, I can see that.
In the final two seasons. And I don't know who else they've cast, if anyone. But yeah, they'll age everyone up. In fact, they've even cast a new Diana. So this actress, this was her only, yeah. So, I mean, they'll only age Diana and Charles, I guess, by about 5 or 7 years. It's because it's Diana dies in what, 93? No, 97.
Yeah. It was, because it was right after I moved to Georgia and I moved in 96. So,
Okay. So they're gonna milk this whole divorce out, and I don't know. But, you know, Charles just, they have definitely shown it as Charles's refusal to ever give up Camilla and not even try to hide it was really what led to Diana and
right.
You know, so sad. I mean, that sucks. That really sucks. So that's The Crown. Lastly, the only other show I was going to say real quick is this other HBO show called Industry. It airs Monday night, so the first three episodes have dropped. This is this is a millennial show if ever there was one. It is set in Great Britain. Is some like big corporation, like stock trade, investment trade corporation, and it's a bunch of 20-somethings set in London. A bunch of 20-somethings trying to make it big. And there's a black girl over there. She's American. She's kind of the main star. And I do rather like her. And she is, all you know by the first episode, which is all I've watched, is that she's faked her transcripts to get this job. Like that she's got some college transcripts from somewhere in New York or whatever. And so she's trying to make it in this job along with all these other people who are literally like in desk rows in this big open space when there it's just rows of desks and computers and they're just at doing their shit all day, but the high pressure of this job. And so we're introduced to a few different characters, and I don't know if I'm gonna stay with it. It's just too much. It's kind of like the reason why I didn't watch I'm not doing a good job articulating this. It's why I didn't watch The Deuce. It's why I don't watch Euphoria. Like, HBO's got to throw all this, like, over-the-top sex scenes
yeah.
and stupid shit like that in just because they can. And now, of course, it's full frontal nudity for men and stuff like that that has to be inserted in just perfectly. And nobody wants to see that. Like, it doesn't carry the story. I'm not saying it to sound prudish. I'm saying it to sound like it is stupid to put it in for the sake of putting it in.
It's gratuitous, yeah.
It is gratuitous. And I feel that way about violence too, but for some reason I feel that way more so about sex because it's just like, come on, this is not necessary to understand that these are 20-somethings running around getting fucked up at night. You know, here's a guy taking a girl into a bathroom stall, is going to have sex with her. Okay, right. Fine. I don't need to see it for 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, I just don't.
Yeah, it's like you said, and I'm sorry if this was one of the ones you just said, if for some reason it didn't hit my ear. Yeah, that Euphoria show from last year, same thing where, yeah, we get it that I'm these sure kids are all fucked up and watching this. Like, I don't need to see them. Yeah.
That show to know that's what it was. Yeah. And I didn't need to see The Deuce to know. Well, The Deuce.
What's funny is how HBO.
What it was. But it's just that HBO is going to HBO it up, you know?
But that's the thing. It's what's weird is that HBO even got into that whole thing with Game of Thrones the last two seasons, you know, where all the actresses basically made them say, like, hey, we're tired of just being, we got to be, Emily.
Amelia Clark.
Amelia Clark, yeah, where she said, like, I don't need to get naked every episode, so let's not do this anymore.
But then she still did a nude scene that was totally tasteful. Right. It was, I guess, more like, she did one with...
But she didn't need to have a scene where she's, you know, riding Jason Momoa for 45 seconds on screen. Exactly.
Even when she came out of the fire after burning... Right. Voss Dothrak, you know, that was extremely tasteful nude and clear that she was fine doing it. Whereas the actress who played Cersei Lannister, Lena Headey, that was a body double when she did the Walk of Shame down the stage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a known thing, but it is known. Okay, well, that's industry. I doubt I'm going to stay with it if it's going to stay on that. I was intrigued by the characters already right out of the gate in the first episode, including one, spoiler alert, who drinks so much Red Bull and does so much Adderall that he ends up dying using the bathroom in the stall at the office. So he just dies on the toilet. And that seemed like, okay, that seems kind of realistic. But then here's this other guy who thinks he's this big stud. And so, you know, he's got to like walk in front of a mirror naked and stare at himself. Pointless. It didn't even look all that good either, just so you know. All right. That's industry. What you been watching, Dean?
So I binged a whole season of a show last Friday called Wayne. It's on Amazon. I believe it was actually originally a YouTube show that was picked up when YouTube basically sold off other shows, like how they sold off Cobra Kai to Netflix. This got sold off to Amazon. So it's one season. It's about, I don't know how to even explain it. It's about this, this like 16-year-old kid from outside of Boston, somewhere in Brookline, I don't know, somewhere in Massachusetts. And he's just this kid that lives in this poor ass, you know, Boston suburb. His dad is dying of cancer. His dad's being played by Ray McKinnon from Deadwood. He's the preacher in Deadwood, and okay. He's the writer of that what's that show? Rectify, I think, was his show that he did. He's been a lot of stuff, but he's in one episode. He dies, and this kid's just a real like real shitty life, never had a chance, and you meet him of basically just he's this like badass kid who doesn't give two fucks about anything, but he has this like weird moral code where he can't lie, he doesn't lie about anything. And if he sees anybody like doing something wrong, he wants to like fuck them up. So mm-hmm. I think even the description of the show refers to him as a 16-year-old Dirty Harry kind of type character. And it's all about once his dad dies, there's this girl that he likes who's in a shitty situation. Her dad is played by who lives with her dad and her twin brothers. Her dad is played by, I can't think of the actor's name offhand, but he's the guy that's the Mayhem commercial guy. That guy, and he's fantastic. He's this drunk Boston dad who is maybe the best character in the show as far as just stealing every scene he's in. And these two idiot twin brothers who are just retard kids, not very smart kids. I think he calls them that multiple times through it, and they're chasing. So the kid takes the girl. They're going down to Florida to get this car that his dad had purchased and was never able to get back up to Boston. So it's like. Basically the only thing he has left to know of his dad. He's trying to get his birthright here. And the car is down in Florida with his mother, who is married to this super white trash Florida guy with this super white trash Florida wannabe gangster son. And so it's just every character in the show is a caricature of ridiculousness.
It's a comedy, right?
It's a black, a really dark comedy, okay. Really dark comedy.
Hour long episodes or 30 minutes.
Okay. Wayne. And then Mike O'Malley plays the principal of this kid's school who has this like, even though he knows this kid sucks, he knows it's not his fault and he just deserves a second chance. So he's going down to Florida to try to find him to help him. There's these cops that are trying to find him to help him. And it's just, like I said, it's a slew of silly characters. It's only 10 episodes. 10 episodes, 30 minutes each. So you're talking about 5 hours. I watched it all in one day. So it's really good.
Okay. All right.
Wayne.
I'll check it out.
The other thing I've been watching is a very short, I think only 6 episodes on Netflix, about 45 minutes to 50 minutes long each, a documentary series called We Are the Champions. And each episode is narrated by Rainn Wilson. And each episode follows a really odd and kind of niche championship competition of some weird event. And it just follows people who are involved in this and kind of shows you what these weird contests are. So the 6 episodes are cheese rolling, and cheese rolling is not what you think it is. It's basically this race down this giant hill in England, and people are just flying down this hill, tumbling and turning. It's crazy. Chili eating, so eating hot chili peppers. fantasy hairstyling. So this like black hairstyling event in New Orleans. Yo-Yo Championship, which is my favorite episode so far. It's awesome. Dog dancing, the dog dancing championship, and frog jumping.
Yes.
So these very weird, you know, like I said, very specialized, very small group of people that are involved in this stuff. But it's told in like, you know, almost like NFL film style, but with Rainn Wilson narrating. It's like, and here comes the underdog. So-and-so's blah, blah, blah hails from Toronto, Canada, and they're known as the bad boy of Yo-Yo, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's just, it's done really cool. I've actually been liking it because I've been able to watch it with my kids. They think it's awesome because it's just these random things to see him.
How perfect is Rainn Wilson? By the way, I forgot to mention on our last episode, but the episode before you had mentioned Utopia, and I realized that was like a month ago. And I have, by the way, watched all of Utopia. I've just forgot to mention it on our last episode. So it's not fresh on my mind because it's been about 3 weeks now. But, oh, my God, you were right. I could not stop watching it. It was so good. Rainn Wilson was just spectacular in it. I thought John Cusack was great. I remember talking to Tim about it, and he said, no, I hate John Cusack. I'm not
I thought he was fantastic.
I know. I said, what's the hate about John Cusack?
Such a good like scene chewer.
He was great. All the young people were great. I got really into all the characters. I just loved them all. Loved the way it ended. I mean, it really hits close to home. And now all of a sudden Pfizer's got this COVID. I'm sure other people have been saying it better than I, but you know, Pfizer's got this COVID vaccine now that they're trying to push through. I'm like, oh,
Mr. Rabbit.
Everybody better watch Utopia before anything pushes through.
I love the scene where they go to the petting zoo.
Oh, I needed that one.
I just thought it was such a way where, you talk about some of the scenes in this show, the scene, the most hardcore scene is where he goes to the family.
Yeah.
Family's house and the little boy. The scene, to find a way to make slaughtering a bunch of bunnies actually somewhat humorous, they pulled it off, I thought. So.
Well, even the killer, spoiler for Utopia, he kind of has a little turn at the end and actually helps out.
Arby,
yes.
Raisin Boy. Arby.
I loved him, though. And as like a psycho killer,
he was great.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. It was just a really good show. Everyone should watch Utopia. And, you know, if you're a real, maybe don't watch it. Maybe Tim should not see it. Because if you're prone to conspiracy theories and believing, like, hey, they're putting stuff, you know, they're all, I mean, I've heard this for years now. Like they've been putting stuff in food, like fast food and stuff to
fluoride in the water, man.
Yeah, to keep us from having babies. Right. Or
turning the frogs gay.
Yes. So anyway, Utopia, just quickly wanted to mention it. Yeah, really good. Excited for season two. And by the way, that show, even though it seems so of the time, that show is a remake of a British show from what, 2016 or even earlier.
And then even Utopia, I think, was made 2 years ago. So yes, in fact, that's why every episode has that like warning where it's like, this,
yes,
it's a total coincidence.
But what a freaking coincidence.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, it is just, everybody watch Utopia. And if you like comic books also, I loved all the comic book stuff. I want to find all of that artwork and my own copy of it because I want to just gaze upon the art that they gave us glimpses of, which was just incredible. Hmm. All right.
So that's all I've been watching.
Me too. I think this has been a great episode. It's been fun catching up with you. I'm super stoked for the season finale of Fargo. We will definitely be back to talk after that airs. I don't know what else is really coming out, what to look forward to. I think we might have a little bit of a
We'll do a Fargo finale, and I mean, it is the end of the year, so we might be able to put together another list like we did last year.
It was our best episode, so we have to do a top 20 of 2020, right?
Oh gosh, yeah.
We'll do it.
Number one is going to be, of course, the Cuomo interview or the Cuomo press press conferences.
Look,
followed
it
by
could
Trump
be
press conferences.
It could be a short list.
Yeah.
Number one will probably be Fargo. I don't think there's much that's been out this year that could top it. I mean, The Crown.
This year has been so weird where, like, I actually need to look back and, like, remember what
I'm gonna have
came out at the beginning
too.
Of the year. So.
All right. Well, that's some homework. And by the way, it for anybody who wants to join along and give us your top shows of 2020 as we work on assembling that episode, give us a tweet at MikeTV1.
Or you can find me at Rockdale_Tiger. You can email us at MikeTVPodcast@gmail.com. I also want to plug real quick, if you don't mind. I have been, since we've been slowing down our releases here for the past couple of weeks, I've been cheating on you a little bit over the past week or two. I've started a new podcast with my best friend from high school. It's not pop culture based, so it's a little bit different road. But it's a current events podcast and kind of just a topic podcast too. We usually run through some news stories. We usually have a main theme of the episode. It's called the Hyperdrive Podcast. So look us up on Twitter at Hyperdrive Pod, or if you look in Apple or your podcatchers for Hyperdrive Podcast, you'll find that. So please check us out. We're brand new. We don't have a lot of promotion, so any listening and sharing or anything will help us out.
I will go listen to it right away. Dean, what a surprise.
Yeah, episode one just dropped this past Sunday. It is a Thanksgiving special. We started it off with a holiday special. Talk about Thanksgiving, why it's maybe an overrated holiday, what's the best and worst dishes of Thanksgiving TV shows and movies to watch, and again, we run through some current news topics as well.
Nice. Okay, well, I hope your loyalties will always remain with...
Oh, of course. I'm still here. Like I said, if Tim Andrews...
I'm gonna just browbeat, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to get all Autumn Fisher here and bail to do my own podcast.
Sick burn.
Shots fired.
Well, I hope that you will be able to keep up two podcasts. I can barely keep up one, but I think we'll keep our every 2 week schedule. I like the schedule. And of course, as shows start coming back, we'll go back to weekly, I'm sure one day in the near future. But until then, Dean, it's been awesome catching up as always.
Yeah, you too. Hope you have a great holiday.
You too. All right, everybody. Until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dean.
Please remember to keep it
thorough.